Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Lord Rishabhdev's Teachings, Text 29, which is all written in verse, in prose. So we'll just, since you wrote it on the board, we'll read the word for word. Jara, idol. Anda, blind. Mukha, dumb. Badira, deaf. We don't seem to get very much response here.
It's difficult to figure it out.
Pisacha, ghost. Unmadaka, a madman. Vat, like. Avaduta, Vesha, appearing like an avaduta, having no concern with the material world. Abhibhasyamanaha, being thus addressed as deaf, dumb, and blind. Api, although, Jananam, by the people, Grihita, took, Mona, of silence, Rata, the vow, Tushnim Babuva, he remains silent. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After accepting the feature of avaduta, a great saintly person without material cares, Lord Rishabhdev passed through human society like a blind, deaf, and dumb man, an idle stone, a ghost, or a madman. Although people called him such names, he remained silent and did not speak to anyone. Purport. The word avaduta refers to one who does not care for social conventions, particularly the Vanashram Dharma. However, such a person may be situated fully within himself and be satisfied with the Supreme Personality of Godhead on whom he meditates. In other words, one who has surpassed the rules and regulations of Varna and Ashram Dharma is called avaduta. Such a person has already surpassed the clutches of Maya and he lives completely separate and independent. Translation, after accepting the features of avaduta, a great saintly person without material cares, Lord Rishabhdev passed through human society like a blind, deaf, and dumb man, an idle stone, a ghost, or a madman. Although people called him such names, remained silent, did not speak to anyone. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatim Deve Korvani Percharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paschatya De Siddharane. Keeping in mind, since it's pertaining to this verse, when sometimes we, especially in our ISKCON society, we've become very inventive over the years. And as the years go on, we become convinced that what we're doing is perfectly right because everyone else is doing it. There's a whole disciple succession of things that don't come from our disciple succession. The example is given that one saintly person, he was performing a sacrifice. But before the sacrifice, he had his cat. So he tied his cat to a rock right near the sacrifice. And every time he had a sacrifice, he put the cat there. So after some time, his followers became convinced that in order to perform the sacrifice, he needed a cat. He had to tie it to a rock near the sacrifice. So after he left this world, his followers continued to have cats tied to rocks near sacrifices. So similarly, unless we try to understand what we're trying to accomplish, often we do things, well, we do them because we like to do them. That's the first reason why we usually do things. And second is because others have done it, we've seen others do it, and therefore we think it's proper. But some things are obviously not within our line. For instance, when we dance in kirtan, when we dance in a circle, especially before the deities, it's actually not following our archana process, because then we're turning our back to the deities, which is not allowed. And besides that, we're dancing for the pleasure of the deities, not for our own pleasure. But the most important factor is that not to turn our back to the deities. So that way everyone is turning their back to the deities, so, which is not recommended. The other thing is that dancing, as Prabhupada showed, was a certain way. Because we sometimes get into this mood that we can dance any way we want, and it's all good because I'm enthusiastic. Whether I'm Krishna conscious or not, that's a different thing. But I feel enlivened by jumping up in the air or whirling around, and therefore it must be good because I feel good. But our process of dancing is actually supposed to enhance our hearing and chanting. It's not supposed to be, there's one process called dancing, and we just twirl around like we're on fire or something. And the other is we, sometimes when we land or we stop for a while, we hear and chant about Krishna. Especially when someone introduces joining arms together and twirling around as if it had something to do with Krishna consciousness. Or joining hands like this and twirling. It just, it's a good exercise, maybe. It's something we used to do as children, you know, whirl someone around until they got dizzy. But as far as focusing our mind upon Krishna, it doesn't seem to have very much to do with Krishna consciousness. But because everyone does it, therefore it must be good. The Prabhupada, he showed his dancing was putting his arms up in the air and going back to the Swami step. And sometimes Prabhupada would jump in ecstasy, but not, you know, grab someone's hand and whirl them around. Could you imagine seeing Prabhupada doing that? It would seem rather out of place. So similarly, here we have the Avaduta. In our society, we started to call everyone out. Anyone who was strange, acted strangely, we could say eccentric or crazy, they became an avaduta. Which is exactly the opposite of what an actual avaduta is. This tendency to give titles to people that actually don't deserve the title, as if we're the bestower of titles. It's a kind of false ego. Yes, I don't want to say you're crazy, mad, insane, or eccentric. So I say you're avaduta, to be polite. But actually what I mean is that you're crazy, mad, and eccentric. But I'm a nice person. Therefore I bestow upon you this title. But then the title is misused because the avaduta was one who's on the topmost platform of spiritual realization, who's beyond the material modes of nature, not someone who's crazy, who's in the mode of ignorance. It's not really within our right to bestow titles to people. First of all, we don't even know what an avaduta actually is, because we don't know what a liberated person is necessarily, or can judge. And therefore, to start giving out titles to people is rather presumptuous. Similarly, within our society, we find sometimes devotees, they're supposed to be performing a certain service, they have a certain duty, But they just decide that I don't want to be boring. I want to create my own standards for that particular vana and ashram, as if Krishna, when he set forward the standards in his acharyas, they missed out on something. They weren't creative enough. And therefore, I'm going to utilize my creativity and just do whatever I want and call that creativity. So that's all very presumptuous. And not only that, but it's more or less in the line of Indra. When Prithvi Maharaj was performing his horse sacrifice, then he almost got up to 100. And Indra became very disturbed. Out of enviousness, he stole the horse so that the horse sacrifice couldn't be performed. Janmanjaya, who's Prithvi Maharaj's son, went into the air to kill Indra, who's stealing the horse. But Indra disguised himself in different ways, as different types of tantric yogis, different types of renunciates. And it was all a pretension. And this started things, according to Prabhupada, things like different types of irreligious sects imitated Indras, assuming different dresses and different role and different so-called features of renunciation. So this is all irreligious. It may start out as something innocuous. For instance, sometimes we find the sannyasis, they even preach that this is, you know, something like you don't really have to dress like a sannyasi. It's not really what you feel, what you're dressing, it's how you feel. As if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could have put on a business suit. It didn't really matter because he was Krishna conscious. But why did he himself dress in a certain way if it didn't really matter? Why did his followers dress in a certain way? Why do they act in a certain way? Once we become creative, we can just do what we want. There's no authority ultimately coming from Krishna. We're not looking at what Krishna does. We're not looking at what Krishna's instructions to us are. Krishna may do something. For instance, Krishna may dance with 16,108 gopis, but he doesn't instruct us to do that. So therefore we can't do that. But Krishna doesn't instruct, so we have to follow what Krishna instructs us, but we can't do something that Krishna doesn't instruct us either. So Krishna and his followers, they have a certain dress, they have a certain lifestyle, they have a certain way of dancing, a certain way of chanting, certain chants. But we find it boring sometimes. Devotees find it boring. Why? Because they don't really chant properly. They don't dance properly. They don't do it properly so that they actually experience the internal energy of Krishna, which is the difference between material and spiritual. If we're in ecstasy, then it's spiritual. And if we're not in ecstasy, then it's material. In the spiritual world, no one is morose. No one is, and therefore no one is trying to become creative. Everyone is rushing out to see Krishna when he's coming back from the pasturing ground. But we decide we're going to stay home and watch it on television. We don't have to go out. I'll just meditate upon Krishna when he comes back from the pasturing ground. Do something different today. Why follow everyone else what they're doing? So this tendency to be creative generally leads to what's called sahajiism. We change first, it usually is a little subtle. We just deviate a little bit, just like if you deviate a little bit, then after a while, the deviation becomes quite apparent that it's a deviation. Change the dress a little bit, change this, change that, change the philosophy a little bit, start adding things on. When I first joined the movement, we had different chants. We were doing programs at the University of Buffalo. There's just a few devotees, but we only had the Hare Krishna mantra. So the devotees heard from other devotees who were in India about other chants. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Gopala, Gopala. Luckily I forgot some of them. So Prabhupada came to Buffalo in 1969, and he heard the devotees chanting, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. And he told our temple president, we don't chant these things. This is not what our acharyas chanted, and therefore we don't chant them either. That there is some authority, there's some standard coming from our authorities, and we follow our authority. Otherwise, how can we say we're serving our acharyas when we do something that they never did? Where does that authority come from to do that? And if we're not connected with our acharyas, how could we possibly be connected with Krishna in what we're doing? And if we're not connected with Krishna and with his internal energy, how could it be spiritual? And if it's not spiritual, then how could it be devotional service? Now we ourselves are practicing. We're practicing to become Krishna conscious, to become spiritualized by not just contact with Krishna. It's not that we just jump over our acharyas and their instructions and example, and we just jump into Krishna. So it doesn't really matter what I do, as long as I'm chanting Hare Krishna somehow, or something in connection with Krishna, then it's perfectly all right, because what do I need these acharyas? They were old, and it was way back then, and they didn't really understand, and they probably didn't know, you know, the latest steps. So just jump over them to Krishna, and Krishna, he knows, and therefore, you know, it's perfectly all right. But Prabhupada didn't seem to do that. Prabhupada didn't add any chants. He chanted what the previous acharyas chanted. He danced as he saw and he heard how the acharyas danced, how they sung, how they ate, how they dressed. And if we want to do something else, and gradually it will be reverted into some other movement other than the acharya, the movement coming from the previous acharyas. And the job of the authorities is not just to let devotees just be creative, because otherwise they'll become disturbed. How can you restrain us or restrict us because, you know, we're voluntarily doing this? And if you don't like our arbitrary way of doing things, our creative way of doing things, then we'll leave or we'll get rid of you. But Prabhupada didn't seem to mind that. If someone didn't want to do their own, follow their own philosophy, follow their own customs, whatever they wanted to do, then Prabhupada said, fine, then start your own movement. But don't mix it up with the Hare Krishna movement. When Kirtananda, at that time Maharaj, he took sannyas from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada told him to go to England and preach. He decided not to do that. He came to America and dressed in black as a sannyasi and told everyone, don't follow the dress because it won't work in the Western world. Don't follow the dress that Prabhupada gave us because it wouldn't work in the Western world. People would think it was strange. As if his dressing in black, people would think was perfectly normal. And he was actually preaching that to the devotees. The devotees got, at least at that time, they got quite upset. And Prabhupada just told Kirtananda that he wrote to the devotees that he's crazy, which he was. And he said if he wants to show something, then let him start his own movement and show how effective this particular preaching is going to be. but he shouldn't mix with our devotees. Later on, we found that after Kirtananda Maharaj got hit on the head, unfortunately, that he did start his own movement. And he had all his followers dressed in these strange robes, even the monks don't. And they put this all kinds of strange things in New Vrindavan. They put this huge Buddha, supposed to be Prabhupada. They had all these different groups come to New Vrindavan, Indian medicine men and all these strange. And the whole New Vrindavan became completely deviated until finally the police came and arrested people, the devotees. And Kirtananda Maharaj was put on trial for murder. Finally, he was convicted for RACO, conspiracy. And then things became a little bit more normal again until New Vrindavan became reinstituted within society, within the ISKCON society. But this idea I can just be creative, just do everything I want, you know, even to the point that devotees used to think, maybe they still think, that we don't really have to follow the laws because we're transcendental. And therefore, Krishna will protect us. The devotees sometimes used to do all kinds of illegal things with the idea that because we're transcendental, therefore we're beyond the laws of even the state. Lo and behold, when the state came and arrested them, they weren't transcendental enough to escape the reactions for their activities. The point is that Avaduta or any other designation, if we take sannyas, if we're a brahmachari, if we're a grihastha, then we should follow the standard, not try to create. Sometimes the devotees, they decide for just, I want to be a sannyasi, but they won't give me sannyas. So they dress without the thing in the back. And then they put their top on such a way as you can't tell if they're a brahmachari or a sannyasi. So they're not qualified to take sannyas to go through the process, but they want to pretend they're a sannyasi within our society. Or they want other people to think they're sannyasis. But that's cheating. By such cheating, the mentality, it's just a manifestation of a cheating mentality. If we can't even grossly act properly, what to speak of subtly? It's more difficult to act properly subtly. People don't notice if we're deviating subtly. But it's quite apparent when we're deviating grossly with our dress or our kirtan or the way we chant, the way we, whatever, with the way we eat. That's more noticeable. So if we can't even regulate ourselves following the acharyas externally, what's the hope of trying to do it internally? There's very little hope. And when we start accepting it, that it doesn't really matter, everyone can do whatever they want, ISKCON has become a free-for-all. Men and women can just mix freely because we're all gopis and gopas or whatever else. You know, that was old-fashioned. You know, women are actually men, and men should be like, women should be like men, and men should be like women. It should all be just one big happy family. And all the children should, you know, that form out of such one big happy family, they should be just all one big happy family too. They don't know who their father and mother is. It's just one big happy family. But there's a purpose behind the rules and regulations. This idea that God just is an old man and his followers are all old people, they just arbitrarily just make up rules and regulations out of frustration, just to frustrate all the young people. That's some kind of mental concoction, conception of what God is. So all the rules and regulations given by Krishna and our acharyas, they're all meant to actually help us become Krishna conscious. Even in the spiritual world, they follow rules and regulations. When Gopakumara came to Vaikuntha, then he met with Uddhava and Narada Muni there. Gopakumara was morose because he was missing Gopal from Vrindavan, being in Vaikuntha. But there he found that, well, when Narada Muni saw he was morose, then he told Uddhava, this is actually in Dwarka, he told Uddhava to preach to him. So Uddhava said, no, I can't preach to him. He said, I'm a Kshatriya, you're a Brahmana. So Narada Muni started to laugh. He said, we're in Dwarka, we're in the spiritual world, and you still have this conception of I being a Brahmin, you being a Kshatriya. So Uddhava said, no, Krishna likes that. Krishna here, he's also a Kshatriya in Dwarka. So Krishna likes that. So therefore we follow it. Even in the spiritual world, they follow it. So what to speak of in this platform? It's the rebellious nature that the conditioned soul has, his desire for profit, adoration, distinction, wanting to be distinct. Therefore, he creates things that makes him distinct from everyone else. And if anyone tries to apply the principles that are coming down from Acharyas, they're considered to be too strict, too conservative. Even they say that they told Prabhupada, you know, one interviewer asked Prabhupada, why are you so conservative? Prabhupada said, how can I be conservative? He said, actually, I'm amongst the Acharyas, I'm being very liberal. Allowing, at that time, men and women to live in the same building or to give second initiation to women. That was considered quite extraordinary by his godbrothers, to allow them to mix even to that degree. So Prabhupada said, I'm being very liberal. But Prabhupada didn't compromise on some things. And if we think, oh, Prabhupada wasn't liberal enough, I can compromise on all these things and create my own ideas, manifest my own ideas, then we must be on the same level as Prabhupada of realization. And if we're not, then the result is we'll simply become asara eventually. We'll deviate from the standard and we won't be able to obtain a deeper level of Krishna consciousness because we're not developing our proper service attitude towards the Acharyas, following them and accepting their mood, not only their mood, but accepting their instructions, their examples, and following it. And then one can actually enter in by the service attitude. Krishna will allow one to enter into the deeper levels of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if we defy the Acharyas or neglect them, then it won't be possible. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. About dancing, I read somewhere that Krishna said that somebody who dances ecstatically in front of the deities, he buys him.
Yeah.
What is ecstatic dancing?
Well, it means you should be ecstatic. Ecstasy usually comes from the internal energy. Of course, we can jump up and down, and then we might become a little bit more enthusiastic, but it's in front of the deities. It's this idea of ecstatic. Ecstatic means under the internal energy. And that comes from deep absorption in hearing and chanting. We're ecstatic about Krishna, not about how wonderful I'm dancing. Or as Ridhanana Maharaj once said when he was in Brazil, the brahmacharis wanted all the ladies to go out, to move out of the temple. So Ridhanana Maharaj said, but if you move all the ladies out of the temple, who do the brahmacharis dance for? So ecstatic dancing means we're in ecstasy. And if we're not in ecstasy, Prabhupada said, well, then just dance and you'll feel like ecstasy. Being ecstatic, but not just whirling around, that's not ecstasy. You know, start whirling around the temple, go as many times as you want, see how ecstatic you become in Krishna consciousness, how much you remember Krishna while you're whirling around, just trying to make sure you don't pass out or hit into someone. No question of remembering Krishna very much. It's not in relation to Krishna. It's all in relation to my body twirling around. So what has that got to do with ecstatic chanting, ecstatic dancing? Let's be practical. We become ecstatic as much as we actually remember Krishna's name, his form, his quality, and his pastimes. In contact with Krishna, we feel ecstasy. And if we're feeling ecstasy outside of contact with Krishna, that's just mundane. It's mundane enthusiasm. It means at least we're absorbed in something, but it's not Krishna consciousness, nor will it purify us of sinful reactions. And many people who are in gymnastics, they're not being purified of anything. Anything else? Yes.
Actually, now we have been asked how we should follow our rules and, I mean, rules in our society standpoint. What can you also explain a little bit, you know, for us, the entrance kind of remixing, you know? But we are in the West and outside influence is so strong. So, like, for example, how we should behave, you know, when we see, like, example, you know, because we have, like, a brahmachari, and we respect brahmachari, and we support them to brahmachari prata, and also sannyas prata. Like, example, when the ladies, you know, when they say, chadinamrita, you know, or they offer to the water for the wash against the brahmachari, or, you know, sannyasi, how we should
Well, it's better. Prabhupada said they had to have the perfect arrangements. But generally, the senior devotees should understand what the standards are. In other words, we're supposed to learn the culture of Krishna consciousness. And part of the culture is not just, you know, the Western culture is the culture. Western culture means that there is no culture. Whereas when Gandhi went to England and they asked him, what do you think of English culture? And his response was, I think it would be a good idea. They asked Gandhi, what do you think of English culture? And he said, I think it would be a good idea. There is no culture. Culture means freedom from material desire, matrivat paradareshu, paradwareshu, lostrivat. Atmavat sarabhuteshu, yakpashyati sapandita. Human culture begins by seeing every lady, except for one's wife, to be just like one's mother. And to see everyone's property to be just like, except for one's own, to be like garbage in the street. And to see everyone as a spiritual being. So that's the beginning of culture. Without that, there is no culture. So in order to propagate that culture, there is some kind of etiquette in the dealings between ladies and men, especially, because that's, everything begins with lust. And generally, lust is all based on sex desire to different ways. So sex desire is restricted, and it's more or less dovetailed in, well, we could say dovetailed into Krishna's service. But sex life is what's regulated as the first principle in the Veda culture. Therefore, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas is based upon the relation between men and women. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, women did not even approach him. They only offered respects from a distance. Now, if we think, well, that was 500 years ago. That was Indian culture. We've missed the whole point. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not come with Indian culture. He came with the spiritual world. His followers were not from India. They were from Goloka Vrindavan. That's according to our acharyas. And we don't accept that. We don't accept that Goloka Premadana, Harinama Sankirtana, that this chanting is coming from the spiritual world. Then we should go somewhere else. This movement is meant accepts the fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers are coming from the spiritual world, not from some particular Indian culture. So he himself said the example is the sannyasi. If we reject his example, we're rejecting God himself. There's no question becoming, making an advancement if you don't accept the incarnation of God. Now our acharyas can make certain adjustments because Prabhupada made certain adjustments. But the idea was not to perpetuate a particular consciousness that a particular society has manifested. Like, for instance, in the Western world, this intermingling between men and women is simply based upon sex life, free sex. It wasn't possible to change the culture. But the idea is if we become purified, then we'll start noticing it's better not to freely intermingle between men and women. We're not so transcendental, and that leads to certain problems. Sex life, unrestricted sex life is the basis of all the problems in the mature world. And when we start realizing that, then, yena tena prakarena manak krishnani sevya. The beginning, let them just chant Hare Krishna, Srila Rupa Goswami says. But then, when they become purified, then start applying the rules and regulations. Beginning, you apply the rules and regulations, they won't chant Hare Krishna. So let them chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, and then gradually let the rules and regulations come. When people realize that women are like fire and men are like butter. And therefore, some appropriate regulation should be there. And that depends upon how cultured the followers are, how much they've understood it. And to think that there's going to be perpetually a Western culture, there is no culture in the West. It's animal life. We're trying to introduce culture into an animalistic society. If it's done too fast, people will reject it. And if it's not done at all, there won't be any progress in Krishna consciousness. And we think it's the standard. We think men and women freely mixing together is the standard, but it doesn't work that way. It didn't work that way in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, and that's what we're supposed to be, part of his movement. But how to apply that, well, that takes some intelligence. But it's not that some lady has the Sanya Acharya and Rita, and someone should, tackle her from the back of the room. grab the charanamrita, spilling half of it to save the poor sannyasi who's about to take charanamrita from her. Might become the victim of Maya Devi. No, you have to be a little considerate of what the circumstances are and what the education of the devotees are. Generally, a lot of our problems, just as a sidelight, a lot of our problems come from the lack of engagement of the devotees. They're not properly engaged, fully engaged. And therefore, sometimes they feel like they need to do some personal service. Because they're not getting enough ecstasy. And we've gotten this philosophy that ecstasy comes from personal service. You have to personally serve the advanced devotees in order to make any spiritual advancement. But that's not our philosophy. And it doesn't work either. I mean, it may work too. Vapus also has some significance. But Vani is more important. We should know who we are. We should know what circumstances we're under, including our psychophysical nature, and then act accordingly. And if we do something in that way, according to the instructions of the authorities in disciple succession, and we do something for Krishna, then we'll be ecstatic. We'll be properly engaged. And if we start creating our own ideas of how I'm going to be engaged, the authority, the acharyas are going to be missing there. And ultimately Krishna will be missing, however much we try to engage ourselves. When Prabhupada was here, he engaged the devotees mostly in preaching. And the householders, either in farm communities or those who are working, he encouraged them to give a certain percentage of their income, come to the temple as often as possible, but engage in their household life, in deity worship, etc. So everyone had their duty, and they were enthusiastically engaged, more or less, those who stayed in the society. But in the absence of very strong book distribution, regular harinams, householders being convinced that the temple is really pushing forward the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, and the feeling that they should contribute in their own way financially and engage as much as possible. Therefore, there's a certain lack of engagement, of absorption in service. And therefore, all these concoctions come out of that, try to make up for it. Otherwise, we start concoction. We just make more and more things to this. Then eventually the society will just degrade itself, become just like a what we consider a church nowadays. Is that right? Anything else? Yes.
You said that unrestricted sex life just provides some bad things. Can you give some examples?
Unrestricted sex? Well, everything begins with contemplating the objects of the senses. Our fall down doesn't come because we trip over some mridanga. Our fall down.
If you speak to karmic guys, they say, what is wrong if I have sex life?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong because their whole life is a mess. There's nothing, can't get any worse. For them, there's nothing wrong because their whole life is wrong. But for one who's trying to elevate their consciousness, unrestricted sex life, first of all, from the physical point of view, you lose all your shakti, all your ojas, all the potential for higher consciousness. Plus, you lose your health. Everything is lost. And you simply become absorbed in lust, which means after a while there'll be more lust. As you feed lust, there'll be more lust, more greed, more anger, more delusion, more forgetfulness, more loss of intelligence. And you'll become more and more absorbed in the most deeper, the darker ignorance. So what's wrong when you're in with the Yamadutas and they're ripping your body apart or they're putting you against a hot iron lady or a man? Then you'll figure out maybe it was wrong. All of the warnings are there, but if you don't believe it, if you can't, you're so dull that you can't understand it, then eventually the Yamadutas will explain it to you. Give you something more convincing than a little philosophy. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.